Cinco, cuatro, tres, dos, uno.
For a long time, open source software and licensing and the implications of using open source software was still quite ambiguous, since none of the entities that produced open source enforced any of the licenses. People are realizing that just because software is free or open doesn't mean that it's free or open of actual licensing terms.
That was Dahlia Saper of the Saper Law Firm, who has lately been examining the legal implications of open source software in mixed license environments. Dahlia will be talking about this and other topics at the 2009 Flourish Conference taking place April 3rd and 4th at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Now in its third year, Flourish brings together open source enthusiasts from Chicagoland, the Midwest, and around the world to discuss the technical and philosophical aspects of open source. Flourish not only features engaging talks and discussions, but workshops on key open source technologies such as Drupal. For more information, go to flourishconf.com or follow FlourishConf on Twitter. You can also find our page on Facebook by searching Flourish Conference. We hope to see you there, April 3rd and 4th at UIC Student Center East, 750 South Halsted Street, Chicago. Flourish. In code, collaboration.
Give me a T!
T!
L!
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 T!
T!
S!
S!
What's that spell?
Let's
get it right. It's a little thing to show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a little get bad. For the streaming, go direct to DLMGS.org. And I see channels of Linux, State.net, Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the castle's just about to begin.
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Link, they said. Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link is still in the Linux Link Tech Show. I said, damn it.
What are you bitching about, old man?
Shut
up. Hi, Link. How you doing? This is another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. We're rocking the Linux desktop with Link and Dan, Allen, and Pat, and this is our 30th season. We're going to a pay model. If everyone just deposits $1 apiece,
It might be our 30th season. Like some of the other guys did, like 2 shows a season, right? We've done 300 of them, so.
And didn't Chef Griffin have like 20 seasons before he left?
Something like that.
Well, we can ask him because Chef Griffin's here.
That's right.
Actually, Dan, I had 100 seasons, one for each episode.
Oh, that's
perfect. Each episode was a season.
And we got Chad Wallenberg.
Do it that way.
Chad Wallenberg's in his 6th season too, right?
Yeah.
Of, Linux Basement.
Something
Linux
like
Basement
that.
Linux User Podcast. Before we get to yammering, I did have a request from our listeners. One of the things that I was interested in, maybe you guys know, I don't know. With the whole TomTom case and the whole issue of the Microsoft FAT patents, This is the first time Microsoft is exercising a case with its fat patents and saying there's a violation. I was curious whether other companies have been licensing Microsoft's fat patent technology specifically. You know, has Microsoft had people licensing this, or have, you know, people have said that they have just allowed the fat file system to become a ubiquitous file system, have not exercised their patent issues, and have not claimed any, from what I understand, royalties or licensing on that. If that's true, I'm not sure. I was just curious if that's going on, if anybody has any information as to whether they have been requesting licenses from people and trying to exercise that, or if this is a new situation.
You know what? I don't have a clue, but I'll tell you what, in my opinion, I think that if Microsoft pursues their fat tax, which is what I'm going to call it, I think that's only going to be a good thing in the end, because what it's going to do is it's going to push hardware makers to go with a different file system that they're sure people are not going to get, you know, heisted on with this thing, and they probably will turn to you know, one of the Linux or BSD-ish file systems for a lot of this stuff. And I would love to see that happen, you know. I mean, and of course, it's all wishful thinking, but...
You know, so would I. And it just brings another question, which I think we asked before, and now we can ask again because we have official legal representation from a patent lawyer on the show. Or is it intellectual property lawyer? If Microsoft... let's say this case goes through. Down the road, Microsoft wins, and they uphold the fat patent, and TomTom's required to purchase a license of the fat patent. Does that then require everybody else who's using a fat patent that they would have to license the patent to, or could Microsoft just pick and choose who they want to pull a license from?
But wait, why would TomTom have to switch over? Why would they have to stay with fat? They really don't have to. You know what I mean? They could just as easily use EXT3 on their very next version and tell Microsoft to go stuff themselves.
Oh, no. I'm just talking about existing
technology.
Probably
have to, if they're found in violation of the patent, they'll probably have to pay back some back payments of some kind.
They would have to pay some money back to them, but they don't have to continue on doing that, right? They don't have to continue giving them the Benjamins for new stuff. They just have to pay arrears for what they owe them.
Well, I think that, you know, even though I am not a patent lawyer, Dan, although I play one on TV, no, but even if Microsoft was to win against TomTom, that would only, you know, be between the two of them. In other words, it's not like that lawsuit, as far as I understand it, it wouldn't automatically affect everybody else. It's just that it would sort of set a precedent. And right. For other companies that haven't licensed FAT, they'd probably, you know, be interested in licensing it to avoid a similar lawsuit, you know? So basically, Microsoft would be able to use it as a sword and go around and say, look, pay up. We already, you know, beat TomTom. If you don't pay up, then we're going to file the same thing against you. But it wouldn't happen automatically.
Okay. So Microsoft could essentially pick and choose who they want to go after. And you could have a company.
And I'd be willing to bet. I mean, and you know, going back to your first question, I mean, you know, as to, you know, whether or not other people have other companies have done this. I mean, I don't know either, but I'd be willing to bet that they have. I mean, I would think that Apple, I mean, I know the iPod comes formatted on FAT32 if you use it on a Windows machine, doesn't it? I know they use HFS for Macs, but so I'd be willing to bet that Apple
the first time you plug it in, it checks to see what you're running, I think, doesn't it?
Right, and I think it automatically formats the iPod to FAT32 if you're running Windows.
It's odd that you know that, Pat.
You know why I know that?
Almost like you have one.
I don't have one personally, but my niece got one. And she was having trouble setting it up for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
She returned it, by the way, and she's getting a Sansa disk.
Well, you know, that's another question right there. What about, like, Sansa and Insignia and what are the other ones? Neros? Well, Neros would...
Koan iAudio.
Yeah, Koan iAudio. I wonder if they have a license on the fat patent. And digital cameras, too.
Yeah, there's a lot. And, you know, I think the problem, to me it seems like the problem with, like, TomTom or somebody using EXT3 or whatever is that, I mean, I think that would be fine for their internal storage, if you will, but if any of these have a, you know, an SD card slot or whatever, and they expect Windows users to be able to pop it out and pop it in their computer, I don't know how that can't be anything but fat. Because that's a, you know, since Windows doesn't have native support for EXT2, or 3. There's that EXT2 driver out there, but that'd come with Windows.
I don't think Windows has support for anything but FAT32, or the FAT file systems, and NTFS, does it?
Right.
Not without installing others.
Right.
Of course, I guess those companies could include in their installation software the EXT2 driver. You know?
It's not terribly difficult to implement. It's no more harder than implementing FAT32 from a technical standpoint.
Right.
But the problem, you know, the only other problem is the technology has become so ubiquitous that most people nowadays expect just to plug it in and have a media storage device like that just work without requiring any drivers anymore.
Right. It would require someone with a Windows box to be able to automatically mount an EXT3. That's when it gets popped in.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's all good and fun to speculate. We have more important things to worry about tonight.
Put an auto run file in the beginning with the driver on it.
That installs Ubuntu.
Yeah, exactly.
But we got really important stuff to talk about tonight from Chad Wallenberg. Chad, we called you. We brought you back on tonight.
I'm going to talk about my Myth TV install, right?
Yeah.
Awesome.
There you go.
That works over dial-up.
I have satellite. Thank you very much.
Oh. But we brought
satellite,
back on.
Satellite's okay for down. It's up where the problem is, right?
You have your very own satellite?
All around. I have a. I actually have a bandwidth cap of 8 gigs a month.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
It's pretty awesome.
How much a month do you pay?
$50.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty
brutal. For less, I'm getting 5 down and 768 up.
All right. Oh, well, I know.
What's your cap?
You know, Obama's supposed to save the day. I'm sure he's going to connect me to that fiber that runs underneath my driveway.
You've got fiber in your driveway and you can't access it?
Oh, yeah, I have fiber running right underneath my driveway. In fact, I emailed the company and I asked them how much it would be to hook into it. It's $9,000 up front, and then it would be $100 a month.
So what is it, a commercial line that's going through? They only want it for businesses?
It was funded by tobacco grant money. In Virginia, a lot of, public utility projects that are supposed to benefit low-income areas are funded by what's called a tobacco commission because, you know, we get tons of money for cancer stakes here in Virginia. And a lot of that funding from the tobacco companies goes into, you know, public build-up projects, things like that. So they built this huge fiber ring in Southern Virginia here. And it just got built like 2 years ago, and everyone's been really slow to roll out services with it. So there are a couple companies utilizing, like, in very small areas, some residential services, but most of it's business services right now.
Little do people know that they actually spliced the genes of the tobacco plant with fiber and wireless technology, so every tobacco plant is a fiber optic wireless router.
Awesome.
So you just need to put a tobacco plant right over top of that fiber. The roots will tap into there, and you will be able to connect wirelessly to the internet.
Virginia, man, everybody's got a tobacco plant. You got you.
Who invented that idea, Al Gore?
Philip Morris Technologies.
Right. Petersburg, Virginia.
You know, for $9,000, you could go out and buy the equipment yourself and set it up.
Oh, well, I mean, that's where I'd become my own ISP in that scenario. Which, don't, I mean, I, believe me, I have literally run through the possibility in my head. But I just can't swing it. Maybe someday.
Man, they get you coming and going, don't they?
They really do.
So, Chad, we heard your little presentation that you did. It was very good. I enjoyed it. I thought you did a real bang-up job of it.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah, things have been rolling pretty good. I've gotten a lot of good feedback from a lot of counties and school districts here. Since the last time I talked to you guys about rolling out Open Office and other open source stuff and Google Apps, you know, the economy failed. Basically, the last time I was on, no one knew that the economy was in as bad of shape as it actually is. And talk about being in the right position at the right time. I mean, all of a sudden, you know, us saving $200,000 became like, oh, holy crap, what are they doing? You know? And,
now, did the economy fail because of what you did?
Yeah, well, it's partly, yeah, because, you know, all that revenue stolen from Microsoft, and we know Microsoft runs the economy. So, yeah, I would say, I was happy to do it. Really, I was laughing maniacally the whole time. No, but it's been cool, right? Yeah.
Before you continue on, what was this presentation that Pat's talking about? For those who don't know.
On the latest Linux Basement episode, I tagged on a presentation I did last week. I got invited by a company called RDAsys. They're an accounting company that specifically does accounting software for K-12 districts, and they're super, super open source friendly. Their software sits on a Debian box. It's open source accounting software. You know, and they get revenue by a service model, you know, support service. And so they invited me to come in and talk to 35 financial directors and financial managers about, you know, open source and all the initiatives we've been doing. And it went real well, real well. I've gotten...
Was this the same presentation that was played on Hacker Public Radio episode 299?
And you know, honestly, I honestly thought about that episode when I posted this up. Because that guy pained me so badly. I mean, you know, when you're working so hard to try to get rid of these crazy ideas about Linux, particularly in education, and then you got some crackhead like that just spewing nonsense nonstop. I was so disturbed.
Well, what was he saying off the wall? You run Slackware and compile from source?
No, all your software repository is SourceForge.
The guy, dude, where did they get him? Oh, my God.
Interestingly enough, he worked for a school district, too. I thought you might know him.
Yeah. He absolutely did. In fact, I've been to their website. Wow. Yeah, I mean, talk about misinformed. It's okay to be misinformed, but to preach misinformation is a whole other ballgame.
Anyway, I'm sorry for getting off on that segue, but you were talking about the presentation you gave at this for this financial managers.
Yeah, it went great. I mean, you go listen to it. I suppose it's worth listening to. I made the disclaimer. It was geared towards financial people who had no idea what open source was, and I only had 30 minutes to do it, so I really had to rush through a lot of stuff. But I did, and it went well. It got a lot of people's attention. I've gotten some really good feedback from it, so that's cool. Sorry, go ahead.
What episode of your show was this?
It's the latest one, 37.
Okay.
Chad, I thought you took the right approach. You know, you're in there with financial people. You just kept repeating savings, money. And I think, you know, that's what the key point was, and I think you nailed it.
Well, that's the thing is, and what we don't understand, because we live in this, like, wonderful world of geeks, right? The people we talk to are geeks, the people we hang out with are geeks online, you know, we talk geek on our podcast. What we don't realize is, like, the rest of the world has no freaking idea what we're talking about. So, and that's kind of the mindset that I took going into that. I'm like, if I go in there singing Linux and, you know, Richard Stallman and please, for the love of God, use the GNU licensing, and then the next time you roll out a piece of software, they're all just going to look at me like I'm crazy. I had to go in and actually speak the language and try to, you know, bring it down to that level. And, it went pretty well. And the cool part about that is, like, all this has come out of that initiative of rolling OpenOffice and stuff like that out. I've done three conferences now this school year, and that's the second major just like meeting presentation, and that's just all K-12 districts in Virginia. So that's a lot of people listening at this point. And it's, you know, it's really, I've been hearing more and more reports about people switching over or getting ready to switch over next school year. So I think this is going to be a huge, after this summer, it's going to be a huge change shift where I am. I'm hoping. I mean, we'll see what happens. Part of the grant that I got for doing all this stuff is I actually have to document, you know, the process that we've gone through, but I also have to document, if I can, how many other districts follow suit and try to figure out a grand scheme of savings, which is going to be really interesting because some big districts up by D.C. have kind of grasped on this and ran with it. So it's going to be really, really interesting next year. I should say this year. It's next school year. I live in a different world.
And I have to commend you for keeping the RMS references down to a minimum.
There was only one, and they spurred me on for it. Somebody actually knew, like, programming hippies from the 60s, and I just had to throw his name out, but, you know. I thought that I would give you one kind of cool update, which was, you know, last time I was on, I basically told you, you know, the whole rollout was kind of a train wreck with OpenOffice and things like that. And, you know, the amount of people that were angry and wanted to actually physically hurt us was up at, like, you know, 90% or so. And now here we are in March. You know, we're 6 months into this. We're way over halfway through the school year now. We hear very little about, you know, about adoption anymore. People have kind of settled down. You know, some people have given up and they know they're not getting their office. Other people have completely, you know, taken the ball, finally run with it, use it, and, you know, have become actual power users. And then you've got, you know, people in between where they're still getting used to it, but they're, you know, they're pretty happy with it now. There's no major issue anymore. So, you know, the moral of the story is change is difficult. But in the long run, people forget about it. And that's kind of what's happened. You know, we're about 95% open office now. Still got about 5% office licenses, which I think we'll always, well, I shouldn't say always, but we'll have for quite some time. There's key administrators and financial people and legitimate reasons that we still need it. You know, state documents that come down that just don't translate into OpenOffice because of all the heavy formatting stuff. We still need it. Still need it in some key areas, but it's going well.
That people have to stop cursing your name.
95%.
What's that? What'd you say, Jess?
I was just saying that's pretty impressive. You said 95%. Are now using
Of our school district, everyone, 95% of the computers, the staff, and the students have been moved over to OpenOffice. We don't have Microsoft Office on 95% of the machines now. So that's cool. We use Google Apps heavily, which I don't, you know, that's whether you love it or hate it, it's a fantastic collaboration software suite and amazing in an educational atmosphere because we've got kids, like, one of the high school classes collaborated with a class in Indiana on a finance class. And they actually got to work on spreadsheets together in real time and things, and some really, really neat stuff on that end of the things as well. So it's kind of cool.
So this, you still have to use Microsoft Office in the business labs at the high school level, correct?
Correct.
Now, has there been any thought given to whether or not you'd be capable of even converting those over, or is the curriculum specifically locked to Microsoft products?
The curriculum, because of the funding that we get, the curriculum is specifically locked to those open source, the Microsoft Office suite. But interestingly enough, it's a very, very small portion of the classes, and the place that we've had the biggest success, particularly with collaboration with Google Apps, is CTE. Some of the programs have been completely moved over, which were heavily, heavily Excel and Access intense. Like a personal finance course is now completely gone as far as Microsoft Office is concerned. You know, those computers have Open Office and Microsoft Office. It's not like they just, you know, all the CTE people have to use Microsoft Office. It's just the classes where they get certified that that they're still using it for. So that's, you know, and it's only, two labs in each of the high schools, four labs total of 60 computers or something like that. It's not a ton.
So what when you speak of the certification, what is the certification you speak of?
It's there's two of them. This is not my area of expertise here.
But it should be.
No, it shouldn't. There's instructional coordinators that do this stuff. I'm the server guy, remember? But it's ID3 certification and MOUSE certification. And MOUSE stands for Microsoft Office something something. I don't know. But there's those two certifications the high schoolers have the option of getting before they leave. And, you know, that sounds like crap, but it's actually not, because you got to think about the area that I live in. Any kind of little tiny edge that these kids right out of high school can get on their resume is actually a bonus. I'm not completely against that. Would I like to see, we do CompTIA certs and things like that as well. Would I like to see an open office cert? Yeah, I guess. That would be cool. I don't know.
I was going to say, I don't think there is one like that, is there?
I think CTA said something about them working on some kind of certification. I could be way off on that. But as far as I know, there's not.
See, I, you know what?
You know, I think...
When you, I'm sorry, Chess, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you, sir.
No, that's all right, Dan. You go ahead.
All right, well, let me say my piece, and then Chess can say his piece, and we can refute you, Chet. What I think is, once we're down to the point of certifying people on, like, office suites and stuff, have we gone too far with the certification process?
Yes and no. I'm sorry, Chess, you want to add to that?
No, I was going to ask you something else, so you go ahead.
The question is, and now I'm talking about a small business employer in a small town. If I've got two resumes in front of me, the only way to know whether or not someone is at a higher proficiency in an office suite, whether it be Microsoft Office, Open Office, Google Docs, whatever, right now is a Microsoft Office certification. So I would say, yeah, it serves a purpose. Unfortunately, Microsoft right now, as far as I know, I could be wrong, there could be more, has the market in that. And from a career and technical education aspect, giving students even the smallest advantage going, and these kids do learn things in those classes, they really do. Whether or not that's going to make or break them in the long run, probably not. You know, one of the things I preach is really what you want to see is kids learning the fundamentals of software. You want them to learn the fundamentals of word processing and spreadsheets and presentation software, not Microsoft Office, right? But because they can get a certification on top of it, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I don't know.
Fair enough.
Well, the thing I was going to say is that, I mean, I think the certification stuff, it's kind of, I don't know if scary is the right word, but frustrating or something, because, like you said, that, you know, there isn't a similar open office one, and it's just, you know, more of Microsoft sort of getting their hooks in, early at a young age, which I can understand, and I can understand the need for people to get these certifications. I mean, you know, you got to be practical, and I've had to hire legal assistants and stuff, and you know, everybody talks about, you know, they can do Word and Excel and all this kind of stuff. They don't say, oh, I know word processing really well. It's all about Microsoft Office products. But it's just kind of, you know, it's a little discouraging to hear more evidence of that, just because I don't know how we're ever going to compete.
Yeah, it is
because
fun.
There is no open office certification.
Right. But this is going to outgrow itself. And what I mean by that is 5 years from now, right now, students in my area do actually get an advantage by having any kind of certification, even these, like, office ones, right? Because of the, you know, especially right now, the economy is bad. I live in a depressed area. Any little advantage we can give them is fantastic, right? But 5 years from now, maybe a little bit more than that, it's not going to matter. Everyone's going to be using this collaborative software to do business, even smaller businesses and you know, like you say, your legal assistants and things like that. They're going to be using a different platform, so we're going to be teaching different things, and that certification won't matter anymore. It's just right now we're going through a transitional period, and particularly K-12 education is very, very slow to catch up. I really think whenever the state deems, God knows, it's probably going to be more like 10 years, but whenever the state deems, okay, it's not really important that they learn an Office suite. It's important that they learn Office skills in a collaborative environment online, then things are going to probably change.
Yeah, I would think that the move towards online stuff is probably going to help Open Office and other things like that, you know, indirectly. If nothing else, it will help other, you know, sort of the general public get used to the idea of using something other than Microsoft Office products.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as much as people hate, like, Google Apps and things because they're proprietary and your information's in the cloud and whatnot, the truth is that everyone is moving in that direction. And right now, as far as collaborative Office software, they are best in the show. And as much as I hate to even, you know, say that that's a good thing because Google, you know, because Google does own all that data and stuff, it is a good thing because it is moving people off of Microsoft Office, and at the very least, there's not that monopoly. At least there's now some competition. You know, at least we've got more than one player in town.
Yeah, what I find interesting is, now, I know that one of the real big benefits of Google Apps is having your documents wherever you are, so long as you're connected to World Wide Web. And what is wild about that is about 10 years ago, Novell was attempting to do the same thing.
Ahead of the time, yeah.
Yeah, but on a client server type basis with their technology through Virtual Office and their iFolder appliances and stuff like that, and it was still, you know, a closed system that you would install on your servers and stuff. But I think they were ahead of the game, but they still missed the boat somehow. They still messed it up.
Microsoft did the same thing with SharePoint, and that was, wow, that was almost, well, it was at least 8 years ago, too. You know, Google is extremely good with making things simple, And I don't know Novell's solution, but Microsoft's solution was overcomplicated, and it kind of scares users away. Google, you know, does a really good job of making things simple and easy to use for users.
I was going to say, I think the Novell implementation was Novell complicated, which is god awful back in the day. Yeah, you had I can only imagine, you know, if Microsoft was equal to or maybe even easier. But the difference between all those solutions is Google essentially gives it to you for free. And they set it up for you.
Yes.
But at the cost of your information.
Your freedom.
Your freedom, but it's free as in beer, and it's a simple solution. But yet it's, you know, still locks up, and they bank on your information there. That that's the commodity, or the asset to them is your information.
Yeah, you know, the crazy thing is to me is not everybody even gets this concept yet. I after that financial speech that I did, someone came up to me and said, "Yeah, you know," because I mentioned Moodle in it, right? Because Moodle's an online course management system, and you guys have probably heard me talk about it before. It's open source, and a lot of K-12 places use it. And one of the girls came up to me and said, "Yeah, you know, we were going to use Moodle, and we set it up, and none of the teachers would use it, so we're going with SharePoint instead." And I thought to myself, oh, my God. All right, the reason teachers aren't using this is because nobody went around and taught them how. You've got a training problem. Now, instead of addressing the training problem, what you're going to do is throw tons and tons of money at Microsoft and have the exact same problem. So it's very frustrating because people just don't know. People just don't get it. They just don't get that there are less costly initiatives out there. I've found that in state government here, and I imagine it's the same way, in fact, I know it's the same way everywhere in the United States, the government loves to throw money at problems instead of addressing the real problem. And I think towards the end I kind of said, you know, that was what I was addressing, is the big picture.
What a very Republican thing to say.
Well, I am a Republican. don't hold it.
I think we're in the minority.
Yep, yeah.
Seriously.
I think you're in the majority tonight. Alan doesn't count.
Why not?
You're dead to us.
That's why.
I'm sorry, Chess. Go ahead.
No, I mean, that's it. That's, you know, the big picture in statewide government and education and everything is that the United States right now doesn't get it at all. They do not get it. No one gets it. And it's really sad, and we're falling behind so fast. And I really hope we get caught back up. And I really think that open source is a catalyst for catching up.
Chad, you had brought up a point about this district that was switching from Moodle to SharePoint, and it being a problem with training of the teachers and education. I saw that a lot when I worked at the school district, where they would throw gobs of money at technology and bring this technology in and not really do much training on it or require training. And the kind of the mindset and the beginning of that was those teachers who want to use it will learn to use it kind of on their own and teach the other teachers how to use it. And until that actually became mandated with class instruction, it never really happened. I mean, technology would just languish. You have those one or two teachers that would take the initiative to learn it, and they would monopolize the technology, and the other teachers would just use the blackboard. You know.
You know what? But that's actually completely true. Here's the thing: is someone has to be standing at the top of the mountain and start the snowball, so that it begins rolling down the mountain. If you just throw technology out there and just expect people to pick it up, it's not going to happen. You do need that, you know, put your head over the cubicle and whisper in the other guy's ear mentality and help each other out mentality. But you also need someone kicking people in the ass. and just kick the right asses.
So what was the response of this woman who, when you, I mean, I assume that you had said to her or mentioned to her the whole fact that, you know, switching from Moodle to SharePoint isn't going to alleviate the problem of people not using the technology if there's no training there.
No, I didn't say that to her.
Well, you said congratulations, you chose a better product. Long live Microsoft.
The thing about it is you have to realize that this was after my presentation. So, I don't know. I kind of pride myself in being able to read people and exactly where they're going with things. If she did not realize that I had, you know, I despised Microsoft after my presentation, and she was willing to come up here and tell me that they were moving to SharePoint, there was nothing I could say to her at that moment that would have made any difference. Rather, I got her information, and she was interested in some other things that I was talking about. So I got her information, and we're talking back and forth in email about other things. And in a roundabout way, eventually I will get back to telling her, you know, maybe it's a better idea to try this. But I knew it was the wrong place, wrong time to kind of preach my preach about Moodle or whatever. You know, because I had already said it. I had already said my position on Moodle, Drupal. You know, I actually had an epiphany about Moodle, and I'm not crazy about it anymore, but we're still using it.
After your presentation, did a SharePoint certified implementation technician come up and punch you in the face at a gas station and claim that you were ruining his
punching the junk?
You know, I'll be honest. Interestingly enough, you know, it's only been about a year and a half that I've been doing like hardcore open source preaching at educational people, and not a single time have I ever had anyone even be slightly, you know, standoffish with me about it.
You're lucky.
So, you know,
luck is the residue of design, right? You approach things the right way, and people will respect the way you present it. I have had people say, "Well, we're doing it this way. We don't." You know. Here's actually a good example. Because everything I do as far as open source is based on Linux servers. Well, in K-12 education, you do not find a lot of Linux servers because, number one, the guys, you know, in my position and the positions under me are making $30,000 a year, like no money. Some of these guys are IT managers by day and janitors by night, you know. So you're lucky if they even do know Microsoft technology, let alone Linux technology. And one of the arguments someone gave me, and he was being, you know, polite about it and everything, but it was, you know, we can't afford Linux. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, well, we can't hire people who are proficient in Linux because by and far, you know, it costs more to hire someone who's proficient in Linux. And that was his kind of argument as to why they weren't using open source. That's a pretty good argument. But he wasn't.
So what's your reply to something like that?
My reply is, and I actually said it in the presentation, is every single institution, every single company has someone that has the willing to learn and has initiative and is a technology enthusiast. You need to find that person and get them on board and get them learning about open source software because it's addictive. We all know this, right? Once you start, you can't stop. Everyone has someone like that. You just have to find them.
Did you, just out of curiosity, did you happen to mention that one Linux admin can do, you know, the same work on, you know, four times as many Linux boxes as one Windows admin can do?
No, I didn't, and, you know, the reason being is, the fact is they will never have, the honest to God truth is, hiring a Linux admin out of the job world will never happen for a K-12 institution, because they don't have the money to do it. So it really is a great route to get someone who's an enthusiast and get them rolling with open source than to try to hire, you know, like he was saying, he could never put in for a Linux admin at $35,000 a year. And then, because this is not going to happen, right? Well, I guess now it might. Now that IBM just laid off a bunch of people down there in Raleigh, yeah, you might get a couple. But this was you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
What I think about that, and the tough thing is you say, you know, hiring a Linux admin for $35,000 a year sounds very difficult. But I also see that as you could probably get a Linux admin, and there's a ton of them with the capability of doing that coming out of colleges these days, at an entry-level job. But the flip side of that is, you know, anybody who is good at what they do and gets better is probably not going to stick around in that $35,000 a year job for very long.
This is true.
And you have a situation where, you know, potentially the demand for outshines the availability, whereas you have the opposite on the Windows side, where you have such a high level of availability and low level of demand that, you know, you have, when we were hiring for technician level jobs back before the economy went to hell, I mean, we were getting, in our area where we were having businesses closed down, we were getting people who were making, you know, $60,000 to $150,000 a year applying for entry level tech jobs because there was nobody else in the area hiring.
Making like what, $24,000 a year or something like that?
Yeah, like $30,000 a year or something. It's like, you know, all we were looking for is primarily at the time, Windows and, you know, hopefully some Apple experience, and people were just chomping at the bit to get this. And I could see that as, you know, you hear constantly on the radio ads about, you know, the average Microsoft certified individual makes $95,000 a year, and as appealing as that sounds, yeah, the true reality of it is most of those people are down there at the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, I mean, anybody listen to this, if you think you want to get an MCSE nowadays, don't bother. I mean, seriously, it's not going to pay for itself. You know, 10 years ago, maybe. But nowadays, forget it.
And another thing that I had seen going on at the district where I was is a lot of the IT infrastructure and management and administration was starting to be offloaded on the IU in the area, that they were offering services to host email and the curriculum or the grading software and stuff like that, the student management systems, and they were even providing support by, you know, you contract out from them, they send technicians and administrators into your district, and you don't have to hire the people yourself. I mean, are you seeing that happen in the Virginia school districts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're getting to the big clusterfuck that is the entire system. I mean, because basically everything is so screwed up. I want people to just start by installing Firefox. Forget Linux. You know, as far as the open source crusade is concerned, this is so screwed up that student information systems are owned by companies that are being fed by Microsoft, who are being supported by the state. The state supporting companies that are being supported by Microsoft that go with testing, so you have to buy computers that have Windows on them. I mean, there is barrier after barrier after barrier when it comes to open source software. I want you to, you know, speaking to school districts, I want you to recognize who's an enthusiast, get them, you know, to install everything on theopendisk.com and experiment with it and see if they like it. And then the next step is try running an Ubuntu live disk and see how you like that, you know. That's, I mean, I'm seriously starting at that low level.
But that's an important start.
And hopefully someday I'll be coming back out here and I'll be saying, great news, you know, everyone's running OpenOffice on Ubuntu and Fedora and SUSE, and, you know, life is good, and the state saved $200 million and the federal government saving, you know, $500 billion, and we gave it all to Ford.
Now, back to your open office initiative at the school district level, have you seen an adoption of open office outside the school district then by the students and, you know, the teachers themselves? Are they coming to you for like disks or anything to be able to install this on their home systems?
Yeah, we leave, you know, I think I told you last time, we leave the open disk at the desks at the schools. There's definitely teachers who've taken it home and installed it on computers at home. I wouldn't say a ton of them. You know, a lot of these teachers have old computers. They already have an Office suite. The great thing about OpenOffice, right, is that it's compatible with Office XP, Office 2003, Office 2007. So it's very, you know, very fluid. They can use it either way. But we've definitely had, there's not been a lot of students who have utilized it. Some, but not a lot. I would say the majority of the students that have utilized it are ones that I've gone and talked to. In fact, I just finished up my two Linux classes that I do every semester with the high schoolers. And those kids are Linux crazy, man. But other than that, not a lot of kids utilizing that.
What
I'm
about
starting
the program?
To get talking about this.
Well, when you're done here, all your efforts will be for naught.
You'll
quit your job. What about the programming classes there? What languages are they using in the programming classes? And has there been any consideration, if they're not already doing this, to utilizing Python at all?
Yeah, so they had programming classes like 3 years ago, and they had like a 6-student enrollment rate. And so there are not programming classes here anymore. There are definitely programming classes all over the state, but we did not have enough enrollment in them. And I actually, for the past year and a half, I've attempted to try to get a Python programming class going, but because the enrollments were so low, the last time they tried, no one's biting.
That's a shame.
It is. I mean, it speaks a lot to, you know, why higher ed is having such a hard time getting, you know, comp sci majors. Kids don't give a rat's rear end about comp sci when they're in, you know, high school and things, and we're not making it interesting for them. There's no.
They're all becoming lawyers.
Yes.
What'd you say?
They're all becoming lawyers.
They're all in the history of law classes instead of the comp sci classes.
I blame Chess Griffin for that.
There's too many of them already.
Too many Chess Griffins?
Too many lawyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got several in my family, I know.
Well, see, that's what we need. We need the other countries to produce the technology so it can come over here and we can sue them. So we need an army of lawyers to go out and sue the people making the technology. That's how it pays off on the end, right? Right, Chaz?
Isn't that why Microsoft is suing TomTom?
That's what I thought. Didn't they actually? This is what I heard. This is how I heard it went down. The lawsuit was attempted. They started to get into the lawsuit about a year ago, but the lawyer that they hired had a conflict of interest in that he was working for the quote enemy at the time by promoting FOSS Technologies through an educational podcast. So what they had to do before they can institute this lawsuit, that person had to suspend his activities for a few months and then come back to promote the lawsuit against TomTom without making it seem like a conflict of interest. Is that how it went, Chad? I don't know who that lawyer's name is, but maybe you do.
You're crazy, dude.
So the Open Office adoption, the Google Apps adoption, has been going very successfully, and you have piqued the interest of other school districts, and you're getting through. What about your other initiative that you had going there with helping state agencies, particularly in Virginia, I think it was, or maybe exclusively in Virginia, to adopting more open source applications, particularly on the server end of things?
All right, so that's a really good question. I'm glad you reminded me of that. So I think last time I was on, I told you about ideas.virginia.gov, which is the Drupal site. It was the first open source site that Virginia's pad, right? It was the Drupal site that I created for them. And it's still live. It's still out there. And, you know, I did it completely free for the state just to get their interest on, you know, what they could do. I did it in, like, 2 days, right, just to blow their minds. And since then, the so I did that for the Secretary of Technology for Virginia. His office is now just recently moved over to a Linode.com account, and they're running a basically a Drupal cluster, and they're rolling out Drupal sites. So that's been crazy successful. And the funny part about them using Linode, which is who I actually use, I recommended it to them. The reason they're not, you know, they're not like hosting it themselves is, in Virginia they've got VITA, which is Virginia Information Technology Association, I think that's what it stands for, something like that. It's a state entity that controls all IT in state jobs. And if you want to do anything, if you want to fart on a server, you have to go through VITA. You can't buy printer cartridges unless you go through VITA. It's the worst system known to man. And so they're getting around it up there by basically buying a cheap Linode cluster, you know, on a credit card, and rolling out sites to completely bypass. So they've got, you know, they've got, they're basically using Linux now. Of course, they're buying it on a VPN, you know, virtual private host, and rolling out Drupal sites. Pretty damn cool.
No, that is great.
So, you know, I definitely got their interest. I'm really worried, and this is the screwed up thing about politics, man, is, you know, Tim Kaine is governor right now, and he is going out of office this year. And the people that I've built a relationship with and I've gotten their attention with and have been supporting open source for the past year now, are going to go away. I don't know who's going to go in office, and that high-level administration is going to go away. So who knows what's going to happen.
So was that company that you said, was that VITA?
Yeah.
So there's one
it's
of the ideas on the an organization.
They're actually supported by Northrop Grumman, which is a huge Microsoft shop contractor. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't. But VITA is actually a Virginia department.
Because one of the ideas on ideas.virginia.gov is to get rid of VITA.
Yep. Funny, huh?
I wonder who posted that.
I have no idea. I really don't. I really understand VITA, but everyone hates it. I do know that.
All their employees walk around with new laptops and air cards while other agency personnel use computers that will only run Windows 98. Wow.
Yeah. Nightmare stories, dude. If you want a virtual Red Hat server from them, it costs you $2,400 off the top. It's a $2,400 setup fee and then $400 and some odd per month for them to support it. So you can imagine why Linode was really attractive for them. You know, $40 a month, and boom, you've got this, you know, virtual private server you're ready to rock and roll on.
Wow.
Insane, dude. Talk about wasting money.
That is crazy. And they have to go through this organization, don't they?
Yeah. The only reason they're getting away with it right now is because of the Secretary of Technology doing this. That's why they can get away with, you know, these websites. He reports directly to the governor. Nobody's going to tell the governor what to do. If it weren't for that, the whole operation that they're trying to do right now with all the open source and Drupal would be shut down, I would imagine.
Wow.
Government is screwed up, dude. It makes me want to become a politician. Seriously. I don't have it in me, but
you know,
it makes me want to.
Chad, what your problem is, you're too honest. You don't lie enough.
Yeah, I could be a lying son of a bitch, to be honest. But hey, especially if it's, you know, for open source gains, sure, I'll lie a little bit, whatever. But, you know, I mean, you gotta you have to graduate from Harvard to get in high up in politics these days. Chess for governor. That's it.
I'd vote for chess.
No way.
No politics for you?
Couldn't pay me to get into politics.
Yeah.
No. I don't think so. I think it's that whole system is just, I don't know. It seems to bring out the worst in people.
It does. And it's no surprise that it's falling apart right now. I mean, when you start looking at it from a distance, it's like, holy crap, how did we even last this long? Schools are failing. Banks are lying. Like, Jesus. Maybe it should fail. Maybe it's the only way we're going to rebound. Sorry, I didn't mean to make this the political economic show. Open source is cool, huh? Yeah. Go open source.
Hooray.
You're cool as long as you don't claim the United States is a fascist dictatorship. Then we're cool then. As long as you don't make that claim, we're all right.
No, I'm good. I don't even know what fascism means, so we're straight. Now go watch your TV.
Obey. What was that movie with Roddy Piper? With the aliens, that they have the transmission so they look like regular people? Awesome movie, man. That's an awesome movie.
What was that movie?
Reproduce.
They live. It was mid-80s, if I'm not mistaken, like 80s.
It might have been actually in early 90s, I think.
No, it was the 80s.
That was John Carpenter, right?
Yep.
Awesome movie.
I think it was COVID.
Spiders is asking an IRC, are schools encouraging computer enthusiasts to go to local lugs? I don't have a local lug. But that brings up a good point.
There are too many pervs out there. They wouldn't tell me to do that. They Live was 1988.
Yes.
Sorry,
go ahead.
You got
the link from the IMDb?
Yeah, you want the link? I'll put it and paste it in the... Jeez.
Put it in the IRC, man.
There you go.
For someone who's never seen the movie, highly recommend it.
Alan Beach to it.
I don't care. No one follows Alan's links anyway. They always follow mine. They think it's going somewhere else.
Yeah, you think sure it's going that? To meat spin so nobody looks at yours.
Valid point, Alan.
I just have Alan back me up and legitimize my link by him posting it, too. Damn, old damn. I'm sorry, Chad, we just cut you off.
They even have a link to a clip of it.
Off of IMDb?
Yeah. God damn it, I just closed the window. Oh, well.
Did you ever see Videodrome?
There's a link up there.
Oh, I saw that movie.
That was a wild movie.
That was a wild movie. I just remember the scene where the guy takes the videotape out of his stomach.
Yeah.
He puts it inside his... That was kind of weird.
That was,
Was that John Carpenter?
That was John Carpenter. He did Videodrome. He did the remake of The Thing. He did, Prince of Darkness.
Right. I know that. He did Escape from New York, didn't he?
Was that John Carpenter?
Maybe not. Yeah,
no.
It was
Escape from L.A.
Escape from New York. The original.
Oh, yeah, I went the wrong direction.
With Snake?
Yeah, where the heck is it? Oh, Escape from New York, 1981. He did Halloween. Did you ever see Assault and Precinct 13?
The remake or the original?
The original.
Of course, because remakes suck.
Hey, Dan, Videodrome was David Cronenberg.
Oh, crap, that's right, David Cronenberg.
Right, the guy who did the Fly remake. That was actually a remake that was good.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right. Videodrome was David Cronenberg. Assault and Precinct 13 freaked me out when I was a little kid. I saw it. Well, it was probably about 10 or 12. And the scene, the beginning scene where the little girl goes up to get an ice cream out of the ice cream truck, and the guy shoots her, the gang member shoots her, that always freaked me out. I was afraid of ice cream trucks after that. I'm sorry, Keith.
There we go.
Look, I derailed the whole conversation.
What you did, Dan.
Wait, David Cronenberg.
Speaking of remakes, they're going to do a remake of V, the miniseries. Remember that one?
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
I don't know how they can prove that.
That was great.
Yeah. That was awesome. It was cheesy, but it was awesome.
I loved it.
Is it just me, or have there been, like, a ton of remakes come out this year?
Dude, it's been like that for, like, the last 10 years.
I mean,
they've run out of things to do.
Pretty much all Hollywood does these days, isn't it?
It's all remakes, man, and most of them suck.
Nobody has any good ideas anymore.
It's just been like, what was it? We had Friday the 13th, we had Halloween, well, they're not really remakes.
Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead.
And Last House on the Left comes out this week. That was, did you ever see the original? Last House on the Left. Link, you've seen the original, haven't you?
I'm sure, but I don't remember it.
That was a twisted little movie.
In fact, I probably have it on DVD somewhere.
And Make Them Die Slowly.
On Laserdisc.
I Spit on Your Grave. You have Last House on the Left on Laserdisc?
I don't know.
Oh. I should get Videodrome. I missed that. That was a good movie. I'd like to see that again. Damn.
It's been a long time since I've seen that.
I will have to say that Watchmen was cool, though.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going on Monday.
Yeah.
Did you see a chat or chess?
No, I have not seen it yet. I'm probably going to go see it this Sunday.
I just watched the Winnie the Pooh's Great Adventure.
I think that's a little different movie than Watchmen.
Oh.
did Winnie the Pooh have a schlong hanging out through the whole movie?
Oh, it's nice.
No?
I think no, but Christopher Robin's pants were a little weird.
Was this the original Winnie the Pooh, or is this one of the remakes?
It's the sequel to the original. It's like the this I can't believe we're talking about this.
Winnie the Pooh's back and he's pissed.
He goes off to school and Winnie the Pooh looks fun. You think I'm kidding? All I watch is kids' movies. Like that's it.
I feel your pain,
Chad. I understand.
It's funny. I was actually looking at my top 10 recordings. On my myth box, because I know people are asking people that. And it's
Nemo.
All like kid shows. It's like Backyard
the Wiggles.
And Little Einsteins. And, no.
Yeah, Little Einsteins.
Jimmy Neutron.
Watch Little Einsteins and Backyardigans and the Wonder Pets.
Yep.
And then there's Lost and stuff.
We canceled TV like a year ago, so we watched the like same 40 DVDs over and over and over. Hang on, I just stabbed myself in the eye. And over.
How'd you cancel TV? That's what I want to know, man.
I just, got rid of the dish.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe you, did something to, the transmission network or something.
No, I just, we decided the hell with the $60. That was it.
Well, don't you get that with satellite, though? I mean, or is that an extra cost?
Dude, I would love to cancel TV, but my wife would explode.
My wife's not exactly happy about it. You can watch a lot of stuff online,
You can watch everything online, man. All you got to do is get a Neuros link. Everybody should have one. They're
or BitTorrent
awesome.
It.
I liked your guys' reviews last week. That was good.
Thank you. Speaking of reviews, Chess, you're going to do a review of the new Kindle, no?
Oh, that was me.
Well, that was Chad.
Oh, Chad, sorry.
You have the new Kindle?
Yeah, if you guys want me to shut up, I will. You can talk about something.
Oh, talk about it, man.
We brought
curious
you on
to hear about
you
it.
So you could shoot your mouth off about things you don't know.
Yeah,
and things
yeah
you
no, this
know
would be good. first of all, it's not mine. I do not have any money. I could not afford a Kindle. It crossed my mind, but I decided my marriage was more important. But we're looking into them for assistive technologies for the school system. So my boss bought one so I could test it out. And I've only been using it for a half a day, but it did what I wanted out of the box, which was I wanted to see if it would play basic text files, PDFs, and nothing like and basically all the stuff I didn't have to pay for. Like I wanted to be able to go to Gutenberg.org, get classic books, throw them on here, and read them, and use text-to-speech with this thing. But before I get too crazy, it is a Kindle too, right? It's the new form factor. It's pretty small. It's almost the exact size of a DVD box. I got a DVD box right here, actually. Hang on. It is the exact size of the DVD box, but it's actually thinner. Really light. It's pretty slick, to be honest. So as far as like the hardware is concerned, this thing is nice. It's got the lithium ion non-replaceable battery inside of it. You charge it by USB, or it comes with a little adapter you can plug it in the wall. It's easy to hold. It doesn't get hot. And when you're reading a book, it's real simple. There's next page buttons on both sides where you normally put your thumbs on a device like this anyway. So you just click the next page and boom, it goes. Really easy to go back to a previous page, whatever. So as far as form factor, it's cool. But remind me to go back to form factor at the end of this because there is a catch. So I wanted to see if I could use this thing without spending any money on Amazon whatsoever. So first thing I did was I plugged it into CrunchBang Linux. Right now I'm using CrunchBang Linux on all my boxes. And it just looks like a USB drive. Boom, it pops up. And it's got, I think it has, I can't remember how much memory it has. But when you're throwing text files and books and stuff like on it, it holds a shitload. Anyway, it pops up and it has an Audacity folder, a books folder, and then two other folders I can't remember. I went straight to Project Gutenberg. I downloaded like War and Peace and a couple of kids' books like Wind in the Willows and The Great Adventures of Old Toad or something, and I threw them on here into that folder, and I went in. And I did not register with Amazon whatsoever. And it did. It opened, and I, excuse me, on Project Gutenberg, they don't have PDFs. So I downloaded them in text files directly to this thing, just .txt files. And it opens. And it looks slick. It's really nice. It paginated it for me. So, it'll save where I am reading in the book. It really turned out way, way better than I expected. There's no glare on the screen. It's very, very ink-like. You can read it without any issues. I'm actually really, really impressed on how it looks. But there's no backlight. Unless I don't know where it is and don't know how to do it, there is no backlight to this thing. So if you're in the dark, you need to turn on a light.
Yeah, there isn't supposed to be. That's what gives it that, book
paper-like
book text appearance, right?
That pisses me off though, because I shouldn't have to. If I'm holding an electronic device and I want to read on it in bed, there should be. I mean, this thing's over $300. Give me a fucking backlight. All right, double. All right. So anyway, sorry. Yeah, getting a little worked up. I wanted a backlight, but I can understand. Seriously though, they should be able to put a backlight on this. The Sony reader has a backlight; they should be able to put one on here. I think. Am I wrong on that? Anybody know about the Sony Reader? I'm pretty sure it has a backlight. Anyway. So the second thing I did, threw some PDFs on here. PDFs opened without an issue. Let's see, I threw, what was it? It was just a couple of regular text PDFs that I had of educational books that I got off of Educause. And threw them on here. Again, opened them up, looked like books, great, paginated them, bookmarked them, worked great. So all that worked great. So I figured, all right, what the hell, I'll register them to this Amazon, see if I can buy one cheap book, and I'll try that out. Did that. The wireless is slick as hell. You know, it uses the, I guess, like the Sprint, I guess it's like the 3G network. What is that network called? You can see I did my research. Whatever, it's one of those high-speed wireless networks Sprint supports. And at work, I couldn't get a cell phone, you know, for all intents and purposes, a cell phone signal for this thing to pull the Amazon book down. But I drove home and turned it on.
Isn't it?
It's not Verizon. I think it goes through Sprint. And we don't have much Sprint coverage here. And you do not pay a monthly fee, which is an important point. So Amazon covers the cost of the basic web browsing on this thing and the downloading of books and things like that, which is kind of cool. But when I got home, I turned the device on and looked in it, there it was. So as soon as it got a signal, it downloaded it, and it literally took like 20 seconds to download the book. I don't know, it was like a 200-page book. So that was pretty cool. I mean, that was really cool. In fact, it was dangerously cool because, you know, with one-click buying, you could literally click on a book and in 20 seconds have it. You know, I mean, talk about an easy way to spend $40. Very dangerous, but really, really cool. Now, the book that I bought off of Amazon is, of course, DRM-ridden. I cannot transfer that book now to my Linux box and read it on my Linux box. So definitely something to keep in mind.
What format are they in? Is it a proprietary format?
It's got to be.
Can you transfer the files off the Kindle onto your Linux box, or are you even locked out from doing that?
Let me check. I'll check right now. I've got it plugged up. Hang on.
My guess is it's probably like something like a PDF or something that has some kind of closed wrapper on it.
Oh, yeah, it is a PDF. Hang on. Let me see if I can open it and see what happens.
Or see if you could just drag it onto your Linux desktop.
Chad, I got a solution for you, man.
Here we go.
Here's the thing. If you act now and go to Snuggie.com, you can buy a Snuggie. You'll get two for the price of one, plus they come with a book light, so you can attach it on top of that Kindle, and you can use your Snuggie and keep yourself warm in those cold Virginia nights.
I appreciate that.
You look like an eerie monk at the same time.
That's it.
I thought that's what you were around for, Dan, to keep us warm on those cold Virginia nights.
Well, Chad doesn't let me. Chad put out a restraining order last time we were together.
No more spooning.
After that ride home from Ohio, huh?
I can't find it. I can't even find the document.
Dan and the Golden Fog.
As far as I know, it's not here.
Like, well, you know what? Pretty soon there's going to be a application that will allow you to organize your e-reading material.
Yeah, you're funny. and for $2 a month, I'll tell you what it is. I don't think there's any way I can even download this because it's not even showing up on the, you know, like the pop disc. It's not there. It's not there. So I don't know.
See, my whole thing is the Kindle seems like, you know, I love to read and I love books, and goodness knows I got a huge book collection. But, you know, and I look at the Kindle and I'm like, man, this seems like such cool technology, but it's so damn expensive.
That's the biggest gripes for me is, number one, the price of the unit basically knocks out everybody.
everybody except for Mac users, right? Because they have money to throw away. Everybody else.
That's what it's appealing to, really, because it's got that, you know, that iPhone store, iTunes appeal to it, you know? You go in there, you see something you want, and you buy it, you know?
Well, that's the thing. Amazon just released a client for iTunes. See, this pisses me off. Because why are they catering to iPhone users? How many iPhone users are there? 2 million, maybe? Meanwhile, there's, what, 30 million users? Why are they building things in freaking iPhone? Talk about, like, media like Amazon. Like, what are they... Why can't... If they got an iPhone app, why don't they have an app for Windows and Linux so that we can read Amazon Kindle books on our desktops or on our Linux devices? Makes no sense.
You know
sense.
What? I agree with you 100%. And why the hell don't they make Lamborghinis that I can afford? Or Bentleys or something like that? I mean, come on. I drive a car. How many thousands of people around here drive a car and we can't afford to get a Bentley, for crying out loud?
But the thing is, they're not even letting us drive the car.
You can't read a book without the Amazon Kindle, or you can't play music without iTunes?
You cannot download. How are you going to download, you know, a New York Times bestseller and read it on your computer right now?
You can't do it.
There is no way to do it. Unless it's illegal. Unless someone scans it in to a PDF and then...
Unless it's illegal,
And then you get it. But right now there's no legitimate way to get the latest New York Times sellers and read them on your computer, which is total bullshit. So this was actually going to bring me to my point about the form factor. This thing's too big, right? It's the size of a DVD case. It doesn't fit in my pocket. Lately I've been reading a lot of PDFs on my Nokia N810. I enjoy that because it fits in my pocket. I can pull it out whenever I want, pop it open, and just read. This thing, I would have to store it in some kind of bag to carry it around with me, something like that. So I'm not just going to carry it around with me.
Your man bag.
Purse, right, my pink purse, right, which it would go with my pink purse. Don't get me wrong. But I want something that's going to fit in my pocket.
And that pair of pumps?
and my pink pair of pumps.
They're not pumps, pocket. Man. They're stilettos. Get it right. And that looks damn good.
My point is if we made software instead of a piece of hardware that was compatible with all platforms, they'd sell a whole shitload more books. You could read it on whatever device you wanted. You know, get Android on board, as well as iPhone. That way you have some kind of Linux-compatible client. And then everybody's happy, and you can read it on a smaller device, which I think is what this needs. I think 330 says get bigger pockets, but I'm not a hippie like him. I actually wear smaller jeans. You know, in all honesty, that is the way it needs to go. And of course, you need to lose the DRM as well. Because if I buy this book, I want to be able to read it on my computer as well.
Exactly. Share it around the house.
Yeah. I mean, I bought the book.
You bought the right to read it. You didn't buy the book.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing I forgot to mention, and this is probably the coolest thing about it, is the text-to-speech is awesome. I don't know if anybody's heard it yet, but it is fantastic. Like, you could listen to it. Like, you could legitimately just listen to it. And the fact that I could take just a regular .txt file, pop it on here, and text-to-speech immediately will start reading it makes it fantastic for visually impaired people. So they really did do a good job with that. The best I've ever seen, actually. But that's it.
A question for any of you, I guess, because I think I missed something along the way here when I was goofing off on something else. Did you say something like you can read Kindle books on the iPhone?
Yes. They just announced it this week. They've come out with a client so that you can read Kindle books on the iPhone.
How do you get the Kindle books onto the iPhone?
Oh, automatically downloaded through the web.
Oh, so you could buy them. And who put that out? Was that Amazon that put that out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, what about other e-readers then, like the Sony one? Can you still get Kindle books or whatever? I mean, where do you get the books from the Sony?
Sony has its own store. You have to go through Sony's store. And that's the other thing.
A very Sony-like.
Yeah, exactly. And
you know, all of these things are just, you know, all of this sort of iTunes and App Store model, you know, it's just really... It's you know, so many of these companies seem to be moving to that, and I don't understand it. I mean, I realize that they're doing it for business reasons, but it's just such a pain in the ass way to put out these cool products. I mean, I'd love to buy a Kindle if it was completely open and you know, didn't have all the DRM stuff, but
right,
that just sucks.
And they didn't learn. What happened with iTunes? Because they put DRM on their music. They screwed their consumer, and now there's no more DRM, right? So
that's because a competitor came out which had better quality files with no DRM. That's the only reason why they got rid of it.
Same thing's going to happen. Same exact thing's going to happen. Brian from Lash is going to come out with a better reader, DRM-free, and then that's it. Amazon's done. Kindle's gone.
I don't
know. I don't know about you guys. I kind of like having a real book sometimes. I mean, it's convenient reading PDFs. Sometimes I'm like my Nokia, but sometimes I like to actually have the book in my hands, you know?
Particularly with technical books. You want to go back and refer to them all the time.
Exactly. You jump around.
Yeah, I agree.
See, I'm the opposite. I would absolutely love to be rich enough to afford buying the Kindle 2 and to have all my books right there with me. I could carry them around like reference manuals and you know, the current crap that I'm reading and everything right there at my fingertips wherever I happen to go. You have your entire library with you. I think that would be a fantastic thing. As far as the free ebook thing, that's going to happen. You know what I mean? In today's society, you cannot anymore get away with suppressing media, no matter what form it is. There are just too many smart people who are of the same opinion that we are, saying that it should be free.
You're absolutely right. And
you know, be illegal or not, it's going to happen, so...
Would I buy one if I had money? Absolutely would.
Has there been any successful attempt to break the DRM? Is there like a, you know, DVD John for Amazon Kindle books?
It's only a matter of time.
There may be, but the fact is, if you go and you look up like DRM-free ebooks on Google, there's a billion websites for that. And you may not get like the New York Times bestseller stuff right away. Not that I'm sure you couldn't find a DRM-free version on BitTorrent or something. But there's a lot of really, really good stuff out there now, including, you know, if you're into technical books, O'Reilly's putting out DRM-free ebooks. There's a couple of really nice blogs out there that I'm looking at right now that kind of aggregate new and interesting looking DRM-free ebooks for you to download and things like that. And, you know, with this Kindle, Chad was saying that you could just, like, you know, stuff books into there, right? If they're text files or PDFs,
yeah, totally.
You could read them right on there. So that's totally a great thing. And Amazon will probably make a killing on this if they would just drop the frickin' price to $100.
And you can, I mean, one of the coolest things, which is kind of what they got flack over a little bit, is, you know, I tossed in, like, in one of my IPython reference manuals. And, well, let's say I'm reading that thing at the end of the day at work on the Kindle, right? I'm referencing something, and I'm like, crap. Well, it's the end of the day. I got to get in the car. But I really want to, you know, keep reading this. I hop in the car. I hit text-to-speech, plug it into my iPod jack in the car, or, excuse me, MP3 player jack, or whatever the hell you want to call it, Dan.
We call them media player jacks or OGG player jacks.
my Og player Jack, and it immediately starts reading where I left off to me in the car. I mean, that is cool as hell.
So I wonder how soon until Amazon will say, well, you know what? We'll sell you a Kindle at $100, but then we're going to provide a service subscription of $10 a month, and that gives you one book to download a month, or maybe $20 a month, one book, and then every other book that you buy is discounted. And the books, yeah, and the books will stay on your Kindle so long as you keep the service contract going.
That's a good question. It's actually, that's not that, O'Reilly does something similar with Safari.
Well, O'Reilly has Safari, yeah, but you have to read all those online. You can't, like, you can download parts of the book with PDF, or they used to say you could download parts of the book, like chapters, with PDF tokens, and you get, like, certain ones, a certain number a month. But you still have to read that book online.
Right. And, you know, honestly, what I want to see, and this was actually a showbreaker for me, when I first investigated the Kindle 2, is that there are no O'Reilly books on it. Amazon and O'Reilly have not made a deal, and none of the O'Reilly books are on the Kindle. That would be huge for me. Definitely would want to see that. But O'Reilly now has the DRM-free PDFs that you can buy, which you could then put on the Kindle. So I don't.
Well, yeah, when you buy an O'Reilly book, don't they give you, like, a code that you can put in from buying the book that you can download the PDF version of that book or the electronic? Or do you get access? Oh, wait, you get access to the electronic version.
Limited access. It's like a 30-day trial on Safari.
Oh, is that what it is, huh?
Yeah. You can pay, but now you can just pay for the PDF. In fact, I don't think you even have to get the text, or the paper, you know, book. I think you can just buy the PDF. I haven't done it in a while.
A-Press, if you buy an A-Press book, they charge an extra $5 for the PDF of the same book.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not too bad.
No, that's reasonable.
No,
totally.
So you go out, buy the book used, and get the PDF, provided the other person didn't pay the $5. I guess they tie that to what, the UPC of the book or something, or the.
No.
How do you get the? Well, what's to prevent you from just going out and getting the?
You really want to know? Well, I don't know if I should tell you how to get around that.
Well, the A-Press books that I've got, they.
Well, now you let the cat out of the bag, you bastard.
Well, basically, what A-Press does is there's a URL in the book. At the back of the book, there's a URL. You go to the URL, okay? Go to the website, okay? You put the number of the book, okay? And what it does is it'll come back and say, on page 256, what is on the third column? What's the second word on the third sentence? You type that in, and then you pay you $5. That's what they do.
But they also, they lock the PDF down with your email address, so if you try to pirate that, they'll know who pirated it.
Yeah, they'll know it's you.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you do it from a another machine, don't you?
An anonymous Russian account. My friend Nicholas will do it.
Yeah, he'll do it.
Nicholas will do it with
you. You have to. What's to prevent you from using, like, a Gmail account to sign up for their service? Oh, you got to use a credit card to pay for it, don't you?
Well, you also have to sign up a Gmail account with another legitimate account, so if they want to trace it back, yeah, they'd be able to.
Yeah.
Whether or not they will, who knows.
Or you could just take that chance that no one will go out and buy, you know, the person that buys that book at the bookstore won't, no, wait a minute.
I mean, if you like a book, pay for it. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Why are we trying to get around this? What concerns me again is you see stuff like, you know, you got your phone, you got the Kindle, you got the your netbook, your laptop, you got all these, like, nice devices that some of them are multifunctional devices that you can't get full functionality out of, and other ones are like one trick ponies that, you know, like you have an N800 and you have a Kindle and you have a Google Android phone or an iPhone. I mean, you got so much crossover between these devices. It would be nice to have, like, one device to rule them all in some cases. That's in a nice form factor.
I need the Kindle application for my N800, and I have one device. I don't want a Kindle. But the Kindle does do what it does really well. If they made an application that did that as well, I would be happy to stick with their model for now, because they are, right now, as far as I'm concerned, they're best in show. And to have that on my N800, I'd be okay with it. Do I want to see VRM-free? Absolutely. Like Link said, I think that's going to happen. But for now, just, you know, stop catering to the freaking iPhone. And remember that there's millions and millions and millions of other people out there using other devices. And give us our app.
What?
I agree with you. And I want everything to be DRM laden so that I can't share it between any of my systems.
I'm actually looking forward to reading books on this thing for my son. You know, I got like a bunch of kids' books that aren't copyrighted anymore off of Gutenberg. Put them on there, and I'm going to read them. You know, I'm going to read them Wind of the Willows. We're finishing up Narnia, the magician's nephew. As soon as we finish that, I'm going to read him Wind of the Willows off of Kindle and see how that goes. So there's tons of free, non-copyrighted books out there. So for that, this is beautiful. You know.
Yeah, and again, how did you say you got this book? This Kindle is through work.
Yeah, it's through work. I'm trying it out for assistive technology. Our main interest is this text of speech, which I've got to tell you. I mean, seriously, it's awesome. Like Kajari needs this. It is the bomb, because he could just drop ebooks into this thing and it'll just start reading them to him. You know, pick up where he left off on all the books. It's freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, but he don't like freedom hating. He's a big freedom lover. So.
But you don't even have to use the Amazon part of the Kindle, right? You don't even have to register it with Amazon. Technically, this is a Linux device, right? It runs a Linux kernel, and you could just use it as, you know, an assistive technology device where you put your books that you already have on the sucker and use it that way.
Sweetness.
Sounds like somebody jumped in.
Yeah, well, we had somebody jumped out.
Somebody jumped out.
And they're gone. They're in, they're out. Wasn't Depchai supposed to come on?
Yeah, that was him. Depchai. And I don't know if he has issues with his NAT implementation, but we shall see. He'll try again. Otherwise, we could just have him call in on the phone number. Is that you, Depchai?
Sure is.
Can you hear us now?
Yeah, sorry. I switched over to Gizmo. I was on a Kiga or a Kija, however you say that.
It's.
You see that? The closed source app works better.
Hooray!
That blows. You know what? What I really like for a soft phone is one called Twinkle, but I recently built up a new system, and it's got a sound card that Twinkle just doesn't like.
Yeah, I'm using Twinkle now. I think Alan is, too.
It's sweet. It's the nicest soft phone, without question. I got to get it working with this new hardware.
How could other applications work fine, but not Twinkle? Doesn't it just use, like...
Isn't that bizarre? Yeah, they're all using ALSA.
Yeah.
You would think, but every time I use Twinkle, every other application works fine. Every time I use Twinkle, it the sound breaks up, like, you know, it'll play for half a second and crack up for half a second and so forth. And probably I have to tweak some kind of setting somewhere, but I haven't got it going yet.
I just got a USB headset, and I picked that in Twinkle. It works great.
Is Twinkle a QT app?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. I don't know if you guys were right in the middle of something.
Well, no, that's okay. We've been waiting for you. We were waiting for you this whole episode. Chad was just filler.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you, I won't take too much of your time. I just kind of wanted to comment on a few things from past shows that kind of, I've been a little busy, and I didn't have a chance to listen live to too many shows. And, you know, one of the great things about your guys' show is the fact that when you have guests on or whatever is the topic of discussion, you know, people can throw stuff out in the IRC, and sometimes you guys can react to that kind of thing, but it really blows when you're listening to it after the fact on the downloaded audio, and then you and you hear something going on that you'd like to throw something out there and you can't. Yeah.
Well, see, we have attempted to bridge that problem through the use of this new technology called a forum.
That's true. I guess. I guess if you're a lazy ass like me, you don't feel like typing. You'd rather talk.
Exactly.
The other solution is what you're doing right now, which is perfectly fine too.
Cool. Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and like I said, I won't take too much of your time. I just want to react to a couple of things. The biggest thing was I should have probably got a little bit more prepared on this. But the fellow who wrote the book Software Wars, I forget his name, when you guys interviewed him, he had mentioned a little bit of a sort of side topic on what he was talking about. But he mentioned that he had been to a biotech conference, and he kind of left the impression that, you know, in biotech, kind of 100% of the software was proprietary. And that's a little bit of a misimpression, you know. I'm sure he was telling the truth about, say, the conference that he went to. As far as the interview goes, I don't think he said what it was, but maybe I should have read the book. But I have been doing some work in biotech recently, specifically in genomics, or what we call genetic epidemiology, which means that, you know, basically we're trying to find linkages or correlationships between particular genes and particular diseases, right? Which is where a lot of the research is going on these days, although, biotech is a pretty broad field. There are a lot of people doing a lot of other things too, and that may be why in different domains it may be kind of a different situation. Maybe he went to a different kind of a conference, and so I just wanted to, you know, not set the record straight, but I just wanted to kind of add on to what he said to point out that, in fact, in my kind of field, or it's a new field for me, I'm a software developer, but I'm kind of starting to get into this field, there's quite a lot of open source software. So specifically, like I said, it's genetic epidemiology, and this kind of research is primarily done by like academic institutions or people at government agencies, things like that. And the analysis tools that we use are generally mostly open source, not 100%. I'm going to throw a link up in the chat in the IRC there to a list of software, okay? Which you can run through the list. These guys have compiled. May not be all the tools that people are using, but it's a lot of the tools that people are using in this field are on that list. And you can go down and look. They're not all open source, but a lot of them are. A lot of them are. And specifically, all the stuff that I work on is, you know. I just wanted to point out to kind of add that to the mix on that particular topic. And I think, so there's a sort of another level of research that's on top of what we do, which is done primarily by the drug companies, where they take these genetic linkages to diseases and do like what they call drug discovery, or but I don't know as much about that kind of analysis, but I do believe they do typically use proprietary software, so that may be a little bit more where that fellow was coming from. I just want to say it's not 100% bad, depressing news on that front, you know.
That sounds pretty. I mean, you sound like you're into some really complex software and writing.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting. Keeps me busy. I'll tell you what. You know, what was the economic downturn and everything. And lately, I've been over here, which is in the Detroit area around Michigan, where the economy is probably the worst in all of America. And yet, I've never been more in demand, I guess you could say, you know. So, it's keeping me busy, but it's very, very challenging, very interesting. But yeah, that's what I've been up to lately. Hey, I don't know if you guys wanted to let me bend your ear a little bit more. Let's see. One other thing I did want to just throw an extra voice in on was the QT licensing that came up at some point, and it was just a real side topic. But I noticed there really wasn't any kind of a contrary voice, and I just wanted to point out that I do a lot of QT development. Actually, or, you know, I don't work on QT. I develop apps that use QT, right? And I kind of liked the licensing, and I'm a little bit disappointed, you know, that it's gone to LGPL. And I don't really know why they did that. I don't see what the advantage was to them. Obviously, it must have had something to do with Trolltech getting bought by Nokia.
The advantage to them is that they'll get more people using Qt and developing with it.
But how is that an advantage to them? They're not going to sell anything.
It's an advantage to them because they're getting their technology everywhere. That's the advantage.
But how is that an advantage to Nokia? They're a profit-making company. How are they going to make any more money by that? The old setup was it's GPL, and it was dual.
They bought it. It's theirs. They can do whatever they want with it.
I know, but what I'm saying is I don't see what the advantage. I don't see why they did it, you know? And the reason why I liked the old system was it encouraged people, which is the reason why I like any kind of GPL library, you know, as opposed to LGPL, is that it encouraged people to keep their software free. Like for me, for example, say I come into a client and I say, hey, you know, he wants me to write some software. I say, hey, you know, we should use the QT library because it's a great library, let's say. Not that it's that great, but it's whatever. It is what it is. And I point out to the guy, but if we use it, we will have no choice but to, you know, keep our source code open source. And not that, you know, that should be, not that you should feel, someone should feel forced into doing that. It just adds an extra, it adds kind of an extra, you know, encouragement or whatever that I don't have that arrow in my quiver anymore. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Because now you can do it, it used to be it was dual licensed. You could do it, you could get it as a GPL library, in which case all of your stuff had to be GPL or some kind of free software license. Now you can, or before you could get it as some kind of a commercial license. I don't know what that was. I wouldn't screw around with it, you know?
I looked into it. I was working on a project at work, and we were thinking of using Qt, and I got a, it was going to be a closed source app, you know, because that's what they want to do. And I found out what the licensing was going to be for commercial license.
Or what?
Yeah, it was like $3,500 for one developer.
Yeah, I figured it'd be expensive because they don't have the price, you know, they don't publicize the price. They say call our sales department or whatever. You know, anytime somebody says that, it's going to be expensive, you know. But I figured that's exactly the point to me. Great, so just keep it open source, you know, and it gives you a real nice reason to keep stuff open source. And like I said, you know, I agree, it's not the end of the world. I'm not one of these, you know, fanatics, or I don't have any religious devotion to it, or on the licensing issues, you know. I'll use proprietary drivers if that's what I've got to do to get my hardware working or whatever like that. I'm just saying, I don't see it as a good thing. I see it as a bad thing. You know, somebody made the comment, well, geez, whatever gets more free software out there is good. Well, thing is, though, it's not really getting more free software out there. The Qt library will be getting out there more as an LGPL library, but it's going to be getting out there in apps that are going to be closed source, you know, unfortunately. Anyhow, just a little bit of a dissenting opinion, you know. I mean, it's not a big thing.
Have you checked out the new Qt 4.5 yet? They got the
I have not.
Qt,
when did that get released?
Qt Creator. A few days ago, last week.
Yeah, really, really recently.
It's nice.
You know?
It looks real nice. I was playing around with it a little bit, and it looks real nice. They have a new integrated development environment, and it's really nice.
Yeah, Emacs is my integrated development environment, but I. The thing about going to the new versions, like with anything else, you know, you got to check to convert all your existing code base. You end up having to kind of do a lot of testing and make sure that,
yep.
You know, so I may be hanging with 4.4 for a while.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of people are. It's more for like going forward kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, they have been adding a lot of features to it, I'll grant you, and presumably... you know, MAMO does anybody know what's going on with those Nokia? I mean, N810 is pretty long in the tooth at this point. Are they going to release some new versions on that? And
I've heard different rumors. Okay, everything from that they're killing the line and that's the end of it, to they're going to create multiple devices using the same operating system and hard and software stack. In other words, they're going to have phones that will use the same MAMO as well as a new internet tablet device that uses MAMO. So what the reality is, who the hell knows?
It'd be nice if they had one that you could get some phone connectivity with, because it'd be nice to have that connectivity anywhere kind of a thing.
Well, the new version of it, MAMO 5, okay, they've released the developer kit for it. It breaks backward compatibility with the old devices, so you're not going to be able to use the new MAMO 5 with your N810 or N800. So it's only going to be usable on the newer devices. There is cell phone connectivity in there. It's built into it. So you should be able to do it if the hardware has, you know.
So they're not killing off the operating system. They're just killing off the support for the older devices.
Well, that's a definite, yeah. They're cutting the cord, basically.
Cool.
It would be nice if they would have had one that was slightly lower priced. That's always kind of been the barrier to me. There, I mean, it seems like you could get a smartphone for the same price.
Yeah, but they come out, they're expensive as hell.
Yeah.
But they're so lovely.
And you can get an NA10 for a decent price, though. They've come down quite a bit.
How much are they running?
It's still, what's the latest? 175 maybe?
You're kidding me. That's got to be used.
No.
An 800, not an 810.
An 800. Okay.
No. Hold on. Let me see if I can find a link for it. Every once in a while, they'll run like a special with a coupon code, and it's like 100. I think it was like the last one was like 175 bucks.
Jeez, I might buy it tonight.
Wow.
The forum is Internet Tablet Talks. That's the place to look for it. People always post stuff in there.
You know what's crazy? We use them for voice over IP phones. Because if you try to buy a wireless voice over IP phone, it's like $600. So you're actually getting a killer deal on an N810 as far as voice over IP.
Here it is. The most recent low price was $219 for the N810.
Wow.
It's a sweet device. It's a nice little device.
Yeah. So that it sounds like that wireless VoIP phone you were talking about, that basically they're ripping you off for that, in other words.
All wireless voice over IP phones are crazy expensive.
But then,
you know,
then they're effectively a rip-off because you're getting the same thing plus more in the Nokia, and they're able to sell it for less.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, if I could throw one more small item, and then I'll get out of your guys' way. I think Link had mentioned a couple of
You and your
times.
Damn items.
Well, I've been saving them all for a long time because I haven't been around. All right, so I think that Lincoln mentioned Linplus Lite. He was kind of interested in it, wanted to know if anyone had used it and whatnot. And the first thing is I hope everyone understands the difference between Linplus and Linplus Lite, right? Which Linplus Lite is the one that they preloaded on the Acers. Linplus itself is more of a fully featured operating system. I have no experience with that. I mean, I guess you can just download it off the website like any other distro and something like that. But what I did spend a fair amount of time on Linplus Lite because I picked up one of those Acers. And I'll tell you this about it. You know, as everybody knows, it boots super fast when it's pre-installed on those things, and it's really kind of been optimized, I guess you could say, or tailored to those Acers. But and the other thing about it is, you know, it's a Fedora 8 derived thing, and you can, in theory, so I tried to set it up to be like a sort of a full-featured operating system. I ended up keep on trying to install more and more things on it, kernel modules and things like that, and I'll tell you, what it comes down to is you can use it as a fully featured distro if you want to, but it's a lot of work. It really becomes a pain, honestly. You're almost better off if you want, like, fully featured, so that means like I wanted to get a VPN up and running on it. That needed a kernel module. They didn't have that. You know, their kernel just comes with exactly what it needs, whereas, like, if you have a typical binary distribution like, you know, Ubuntu or Fedora or anything, those modules will be there already even if you're not using it. None of them are there. You either got to compile them yourself or, you know, find somebody who compiled it. I needed one more for a VPN. I needed one more to get any kind of encryption going. And there's just a lot of stuff you seem to have to hack away on it to get it going. You can do it, but it's kind of a lot of work. So I would say, in a nutshell, if you just want to use it for the basics, like, you know, kind of the netbook is, so to speak, intended for, it's great. It's super. If you want to use it for fully featured, like doing development or some heavier networking or things like that, you can do that also, but you'll have to spend some time configuring it. It's not just, you know, apt-get install or something like that. So how's that for a nutshell?
I found the same thing with my Acer, and I thought the Linplus Lite was pretty decent, but after a month or two, I ended up replacing it. I've got Debian Lenny on there now, and it's working great.
Yeah, I still have that Linplus on there, and I still run it, but I also have I've got a bootable USB flash drive that has Ubuntu on there, and that way I can kind of choose, because I wanted to really give it a whirl to make sure that I was definitely kind of trying it out. And I even hacked it up a bit, and, you know, there are some closed source parts to it too. That was another big problem I ran into, because I started trying to modify some of the boot up scripts, and so I ended up, they're not all scripts, some of them are programs, right? They're compiled programs. So I said, okay, no problem. I downloaded the whole source of the whole thing. And when you do that, you know what? Some of it's just binary blobs. It's not all. It's, you don't get the source for the whole thing. There's a couple of closed source portions, and those happen to be the portions that I needed to modify. So I was kind of out of luck, you know. So it is what it is, and it's nice. It does what it's supposed to do, I think, pretty well. But, you know, if you want to take it to the next step. Like I said, I'm still running it, and you can do it, but you end up having to put a fair amount of work into hacking on it.
See, now, I still have Linplus Lite on my Acer Aspire 1. And I don't recall. I use it for, you know, everything I need to use it for, anything I would do on a regular laptop except for maybe compiling programs or whatever, but I don't recall doing a lot of modifications in it. I changed the background images and stuff, and
that's just personal customization. The only thing I really had a hard time with was getting VPNC to run on it.
Yeah,
VPNC, you have to find the kernel module.
Yeah, exactly.
It really wasn't. It was a quick Google search. I found the kernel module. I stuck it in there, and that was it. It was done. But that, I think that was probably the one thing that I had the most trouble with, other than the initial software upgrade because of that SSL or that CERT problem that Fedora had so long ago. Other than that, you know, it's just done what it's supposed to do, and I like the fact that you can get it up and running in 15 seconds or less.
15 seconds, yeah.
No, I agree with you, Link. I'll tell you what. I like I said, I still have it on my computer too. But I'm just saying, like, even that, like, you had to install a kernel module for that. There, if you ever try using like LVM or any kind of like Luke's, you know, crypt setup, anything that requires like device mapping, you'll have to install a kernel module for that. And those kernel modules, you know, you're not getting those. Pretty sure you can't get those from Acer or Linpus or even Fedora. You'll have to get those. You'll have to get those from somebody else who compiled it. You know, either you compilers.
Right.
So I mean, yeah, I understand it's not really that big of a deal. But it just seemed like a lot of stuff that on a more fully featured distro would have just been like apt-get install. You know, on this one, you know. Googling and installing things off of who knows where and whatnot. But I agree with you. It's great. It starts up fast. I'm still running it, and now that I've taken the time to get it hooked up the way I like it, it you know, works for me.
Yeah, they just plod right along. I just love how, you know, I love how fast it is. It's so convenient being a damn near an instant on thing, you know?
Yeah, there's almost no reason to use suspend on that thing, because every time I think about suspending it, I just say, oh, I'll just reboot it when I come back, you know?
Yeah, right. What's 15 seconds, right, compared to anything else?
Yeah, yeah.
You pop the power button, it takes you 15 seconds to sit down before you can look at it anyway, and it's already up and running. There's no need to suspend anything. But, you know, that being said, I really would like to try a full-featured distribution on there. However, that's more meddling than I have had time to do so far. As far as I can tell, like, you can, and Alan would know better because he's actually put Ubuntu on there, but, like, I keep looking at the forums and stuff every now and then. I get a few spare seconds, and I'll look, and people are talking about, you know, oh, you put, you know, Ubuntu on there, and then you follow, you know, these two pages of tweaks or something to get it so that the file systems aren't, not, you know, constantly writing to the SD media or the flash media or whatever. And that just seems like, you know, an entire afternoon's worth of tweaking to me that I don't have time to spend on. I'm hoping that somebody will do a brilliant thing like they've done with the triple EPC and just come up with a drop-in, you know, installation ISO that takes care of all that shit and you don't have to worry about it. I'll be on that like white on rice, you know what I mean? But until then, I probably will use Linpus unless I, you know, run into a big swath of free time that I can play with it.
Well, I put the
but you know that brings up a version. What's that?
I put the netbook version of Ubuntu on there. It really pretty much installed itself. I mean, I really didn't do a whole lot after that.
Mm-hmm. What about like the wireless? I had to tweak a little bit to get
it. Wireless worked for me.
Okay.
On it. Wireless
right off the bat?
Any problem. Yeah. On it. I don't think the switch in the front there works anymore.
Well, I don't care about that.
It doesn't light up or anything, and I'm not sure that, you know, you used to be able to turn the wireless off completely on it in Linpus, and I'm not sure that it does that anymore. That's about the
I think that's just the light. I think the switch works and the light doesn't. That's what I read anyhow.
Yeah, I have been sort of iffy on that one because I've moved that switch and nothing really happened on it. And sometimes it does. So, I mean, it's sort of a crapshoot on it. The only thing I did was I put a little script together that changed when the fan came on and off on it, because the fan seemed to be running a little bit more on it. So there was a hack out there to make it. I forget what it comes on now. 70C, I think it is.
I had to do the same thing, Alan, on my Debian install. A couple little hacks like that.
Yeah, but it was nothing real major. It was harder actually just digging up the instructions, because most of the instructions assume that you're taking a full Ubuntu install onto it. And Netbook seems to take a whole lot of that stuff away. Yeah, and do it all for you. I think the fan one I found off the full Ubuntu install. But other than that, I mean, it works really fine. I had really no issues with it. I think the battery life may be a little bit less than what it was with the Olympus one. But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I think the wireless is on all the time. So that may be the issue there. But it works nicely.
All right, well, fellas, I think I've taken enough of your time. I appreciate the opportunity to get on.
I appreciate you coming on, Depshay. Depshay, right?
Depchai.
Depchai, I'm sorry.
So, all right, well, I'll... as long as we're talking about that, one more quick thing. I was over in Vietnam not long ago, and I just want to let you guys know that there, you know, at this time... It's pretty tough to find a laptop over here still that doesn't have Windows on it. You know, there are more options than there used to be. Dell has, like, one model, and maybe someone else has one. I'll tell you, though, it's still pretty hard. Over there, no problem. Basically, almost anything you buy over there, you can get it, you know, with Linux already on it or with whatever you want, you know, without anything on it, if that's what you want, you know. And obviously, you can probably get that with a bootleg copy of Windows if that's what you want. But I just thought I'd give you a little report on what's going on over there. It's been that way for quite some years. Anyhow, I'm gonna jump off here. Thanks for the time, fellas. We'll talk to you again sometime soon.
Cool. Take care, man.
Thanks.
Okay.
Sure.
Take care.
Hey,
take it easy.
Yeah.
See you later.
Yeah. Have a good one.
It's getting late. I think we're going to wrap it up.
And there's a sleepy doll.
What? Hey, Dan, did you figure out the contest winners yet or no?
No, I haven't. I will do that this week, I promise.
Okay, we'll announce the winners next week.
Yes. I know. I still got to send out. Every time I go to the store, I'm like, I keep forgetting something. When I come home, I realize I haven't bought the mailers to send the books out. But I got to get out there and get them and start sending them out this week.
Speaking of books, I've heard from several people that the O'Reilly books that they won a couple months back, they still haven't received them. So I'm contacting the O'Reilly people to see what the hell the deal is.
Yes, so I want to thank our I can't call them guests because our extra host,
new members of the family, baby.
That's right.
Our new tech show family members,
Chad and Chess, because I don't want to. I can't put him on as special guest. Well, I guess we could say because today Chad was a special guest, but now I got to add the names. Actually, I got to add the names up in the RSS feed.
Got to add them to the tech show mailing email address.
That's true. I should do that. All right.
I really appreciate you guys having us, and I'm very, very happy to be coming back. Late long. Glad you guys are including us, and really appreciate you thinking of us.
Oh, hey, no problem.
Yeah, this has been great, guys. Thank you.
It's our pleasure.
No problem.
Unlike some people who decided not to show up tonight, we won't name any names. But I think his initials are DSY, but I don't know.
Oh!
Snap!
He's doing dishes.
Mm-hmm, yeah, slightly excuse. Or another person, our homeless representative didn't come on either.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to give a teaser out. All the stuff that I was going to talk about tonight and didn't, like usual. If you want to know what it is, you'll have to read my blog.
Where can we find your blog? Because no one reads it.
Ooh, you would have to look hard, I'm sure.
You can go to linuxplanet.org blogs, and in between the postings for a commercial comic book reader, you might see Linux post.
Somebody frosted again.
You have to. It's in between the commercial comic book reader and the 5700 Myth TV posts.
Yeah. I don't know who that
kind
is.
Snuggied right in there.
I haven't posted about Myth TV in a while.
That was popcorn hour.
Dan?
Come on, get it right. No, I just posted.
No, you haven't posted about Myth TV in a while, but it's just the 4,000 posts that you've done before that just, you know, push everything else out of the way.
I haven't posted since last year.
We got like a Happy New Year post from you or something, didn't we, this year?
Yeah, I think
no,
it was
I don't even
New
think
year's
that. Did that? No, this is a really good.
I think that was last year.
That was last year. New Year.
That was January 2008.
I'm sorry. I just don't have anything to say, so I just figure out. When I need to say something, it's on the Identica one, so.
Oh, you know what, Link? You screwed up, man. Because Lord, somebody already posted a very special teaser. Screw you, pal.
Huh?
Hey, guys,
and for only 23 cents more a month, you'll have another special teaser.
But somebody already posted a teaser, so you're too late.
There is a very special teaser, isn't there?
Yes, there is. I don't know what it is, but I'll find out soon. Actually, there's also, aside from the Myth TV posts, which haven't happened in a while, there's the Dan traveling to India post, isn't there? Isn't that him? He's the guy that's traveling to India?
No, it's not. It's somebody else.
Oh, that's
Andy Lockram.
Yes, okay. That's some, but, you know, that's interesting. He's got a good deal there. You know what? I tried the, who did the Android fonts posting? Who was that?
Oh, that was a good post.
Yeah, I tried that at work, and I guess I gotta restart my X system or something, but I can't find the fonts.
Huh. That guy's been doing a lot of good posts. What is his name?
He's new.
Stefano.
He's Italian guy. Stefano, yeah.
Yeah.
Stefano Frenzo.
He's been pumping them out, man. I've been enjoying those.
And I'll tell you what, it's a Board and Blogging, the guy Florida Linux Show 2009 Jacksonville.
Yeah.
He's got a pretty wife.
Oh, does he?
Dan notices right away.
I was like, wait a minute, who's that woman there?
I noticed he had a pretty mouth, but I didn't realize it.
All right, that's it.
Hey, everybody.
I will play us out with music tonight, which should be rather interesting.
99
music. Well, I'm not going to play Doba this week. I've tortured you guys enough
everybody.
With Doba. But what I am going to play, in a bit of a tradition, a bit of a break from my traditional run to a
good night, Never Neverland.
Good night. Run to where I used to get all my music from? PodSafe Audio. I have gone to OC Remix, which provided, you know, reading the terms of the contract, provided we give credit, we're allowed to play this music. And I pulled down two mixes. One is, the first one we're listening to is Blaster Master, Dance Master OC Remix by Am I Evil. And that's AmiEvil. And the other one is the Super Mario Brothers Tropical Paradise OC Remix by Dr. Fruitcake. So I think these should be rather entertaining. They're... Altogether, I think it's going to be about 7 minutes. So you just sit back and enjoy. And we'll catch you next week where we have Rowan Golfer on about his evil, what is it, P.Y. Moeller or something? What was the name of that? His adventures at scale and
open
his...
Open Moeller or something?
Open Moeller and his efforts to creating a open source dental software. solution, which he's been working on for some time in Python. It's going to be exciting stuff. And maybe we'll have Dave Yates. Maybe we'll have Chess Griffin. Maybe Chad Wallenberg will be here. Maybe Gorkon will show up. Who knows? It's always an adventure, but I thank everybody for coming on, and I'm going to play us out, unless you guys have something more to say.
Oh, have a good night.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Nothing for me.
Here it is. Black Man's a Dad Salty Remix.
We'll be right back. teaching and learning are the same things. I mean, when teaching is a learning experience, because in order to teach, you have to examine the thing very closely, so you're learning yourself what its nature is.
Now in its third year, the 2009 Flourish Conference, taking place April 3rd and 4th at the University of Illinois Chicago, brings together open source enthusiasts from Chicagoland, the Midwest, and around the world to discuss the technical and philosophical aspects of open source. Flourish not only features engaging talks and discussions, but workshops on key open source technologies such as Drupal. For more information, go to flourishconf.com or follow FlourishConf on Twitter. You can also find our page on Facebook by searching Flourish Conference. We hope to see you there, April 3rd and 4th at UIC Student Center East, 750 South Halsted Street, Chicago. Flourish. In code, collaboration.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are linking bad. But the show is go direct to DLNGS.org. And I see channels at LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the gallon's just about to begin.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up. It's over.
All right, who's still on?
I am. What do you need?
Is Link still on?
Well, I don't know. Link? No, he's not.
He's still in the RC. Okay.
Why, what did you need?
Oh, he's saying that this might be his last show? Is he joking?
I think he is joking.
Okay, just checking.
When did he say that?
In the RC not too long ago.
No, I'm not. No, I didn't know anything about that. He's got to be joking.
I hope so. Well, that's the case.
Nah, when did he say that? At what time?
Let me find it.
Bump, 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 bump.
10:51 p.m. 10:51:19. Alrighty, man. Have a good night.
I don't know what he meant by that. I don't know. Where'd the bastard go? Alright. Well, I will see you. I will see you soon. Have a good one.
Have a good night, man. Bye.
You too. And that is it for this week's Linux Link Tech Show. To hell with you all. And I would be remiss if I did leave you without a little piece of Doba from popular demand. Drum solo! it's actually over. I didn't expect it to end that suddenly. Well, thank you for enjoying another Doba tune, and as our year of Doba commences, expect plenty more surprises along the way. And that was for you, Peter 64. That was for you. Is Alan here?
He's a bastard. Not yet.
He's a fag. Wait, what time, is Flourish still going on?
What?
Is Flourish still going on?
Flourish. Oh, I have no idea.
How many times do we have to listen to this before we remember what the dates are on Flourish?
Well, if we keep playing it, it'll roll around again, right?
Yeah, why not? Flourish Open Source Conference 2009.
Hello. There you go.
Oh, April 3rd and 4th. There we still is. Got a couple of weeks of playing it.
Oh!
Alan, man.
Sorry.
The A-Team is here.
Yeah, for some reason, I couldn't get onto the
men smile.
The Xbox for some reason.
Sprinkle them with love.
What about Davey Yates? Is he jumping in?
Pulling down your pants and give you romance. The Alan Man can. The Alan Man can. Because he sprinkles it with love and makes Tim McGraw smile. Goddamn cats! I'm sorry, that was an inappropriate use of language. I apologize, Link. Effing cat.
You gotta put a 20 extra in the swear jar.
Yeah.
This is the extra content, right? So.
Yeah.
If we're not streaming yet, this is the extra content that most people don't
hear.
Oh, yes,
wait. Dude, we aren't streaming yet. Let me record to the stream.
Yeah, you might want to fix that too, Dan.
Ball mouse on my knee doesn't work well. Oh no!
Balls hanging down to your knee.
I wish.
Wow! They make a cream for that or something, don't they?
They're all shriveled up these days.
Yeah, atrophy. I know. Mine are the same way.
Comes from lack of use.
It does. Yeah.
Alan making love like a man.
I apologize for the chewing.
Oh, somebody's calling me.
Calling you what?
Right to the voicemail. Right to the voicemail with you.
Hopefully that doesn't happen 5 times.
At that point, you turn the phone off.
Yeah, as well.
Turn off the phone, and then you never worry about that nasty voicemail thing.
Yeah, and we going to Southeast Links Fest?
I'm hoping to. What's the date on that again?
Oh, hell if I know. It's been a summer time.
How the hell are we supposed to go if you don't tell us when we're supposed to go?
Right.
That's a Dave Yates thing anyway. He's supposed to be, you know, hooking us up there.
I should tell Dave Yates to change when Southeast Linux Fest is. To accommodate my schedule. What was I just about to look at?
6/13 this year, right?
Yeah. 6/13.
Yeah,
okay.
You know what sucks about that?
For this shindig.
Is I gotta go down, I gotta drive my ass down to Dave Yates' area in South Carolina that weekend, then I gotta come home, then I gotta drive the kids back down there the next weekend. Why couldn't he make it a more convenient weekend?
Why don't you just take the kids down on the first weekend and drop them off and let them hang with Grandma for a week?
That's the problem. I gotta wait till school's over.
No.
You know. What
school, school.
One baby said that I might not be able to go.
Alright, we're streaming everywhere. Damn, I'm hungry.
My problem is I'm going to have to find a giant slingshot big enough to shoot me there, I think.
Get yourself down to my place. I'll take you.
Well, I know you'd take me if I was there. That's what scares me.
You know what? It would probably take you just as long to drive down to my place and then go with me as it would from you to leave your place from where you are and go down the straight down.
It probably would, because I know how you drive, man. You take every freaking back road in between your starting point and destination that's humanly possible.
Road trip, sounds like.
It definitely is.
We'll go pick Chad up.
Rent another car, do a road trip.
It'll be a love-making session. Yeah. We could all stay at Dave Yates' place.
That's what I heard. I thought everybody was invited to stay there.
We'll knock his door down and say, Mrs. Yates, make us some damn dinner now, woman. Before we smack you like Dave.
That'll go over real well. All right, where is it now?
For a long time, open source software and licensing.
Be like, woman, get in the kitchen. How dare you?
Get your ass beat so good, we just, well, I'd bring the camera for that one.
Actually, what we need to do is get a recording of Dave Yates saying stuff like that. Then we just pop it out and play it, like in the other room, and put it up against a megaphone. Boy, that would be awesome.
What,
be
North fun. Carolina, right?
I thought it was in South Carolina.
South Carolina? Clemson.
Where's the website? Do they have a website? How come nobody knows?
SoutheastLinuxFest.org.
It's Clemson. That's South Carolina.
It's South Carolina. That's what I thought. I couldn't remember. I don't know my colleges real well.
How long is it going to take us to drive down there, Alan? Was it like 1,900 hours or something like that?
Don't they have directions?
Up now as we speak.
Of course, you know what this means, that Alan will drive and I will sleep, you know, like I normally do.
Oh, well, I'm with it. Okay, Clemson University, get directions.
12 hours.
Two here. It's about 12 hours. Yeah.
12 hours. Ouch.
And for me, it's like, what, 10 hours?
Nah, dude,
11 hours
like,
and 20 more
like 4.5 for me.
4.5, is that it?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Let me see where it is. Actually, I know... What an asshole Google map this is. That tells me nothing. It's just a big... I gotta zoom out. I don't want to...
If you're seeing an asshole, Danny, you are zoomed in way too far.
Way too close.
Oh, wait. Gotta keep going so I can get my bearings.
Three.
Oh,
OS
yeah, you know what?
Messages. Holy freaking crap.
It isn't that far from me.
Did you guys start the show?
No, not yet. We're too busy looking at the map.
Start the show, Dan.
Hold on. Come on. Ah! Great. It doesn't look like it's that far. No, I remember going through Spartanburg. It's in the middle of the state, isn't it?
Clemson's up in the corner near Georgia.
Yeah, it's up in the corner.
Oh, crap. Oh, are you serious?
Yep.
Wait, where is it in regards to Charlottesville? Charlotte, North Carolina.
It's like a little bit southwest. It's not bad. I mean,
about two and a half hours from Charlotte.
Oh,
south of Charlotte?
Oof. Yeah.
Okay, scratch that. 6 hours then, Dan.
Dude, I was going to say, I go down to my mother-in-law's who lives in Chester, and that takes us about 9 hours from where I am. Ah, damn you, Dave Yates, you filthy old man.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours from Charlotte. 138 miles. I guess that's two hours.
Well.
Alright, I'm not going. Looks like I drive by myself.
Flying to Charlotte.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's no easy way to do that, Alan. I checked. You still got to, like, drive.
Yeah, you guys have
to
go
to I flew into Charlotte years ago.
Don't they have, like, one of them bush pilots where they can swoop down and drop you off in the parking lot or some shit like that?
I just fly into Raleigh. I heard Chess Griffin has, like, 4 Mercedes-Benz he can pick us all up in.
Yeah. Well, nice. You guys are going to have to take 81 down to 77 and pick up a 85, I think. 77 to
81 to 70.
Yeah, 77 to 85.
You're going to do 81 to 70? We used to take 70.
I'm just going by what Google says. Start the show, Dan. We can talk about it while we're there.
All right, here we go.
And then we'll talk about where we're going.
Great, ready?